there are essentially two stories that appear at the end of Sefer Shoftim. The one we're going to start today, Pesach Micha, and the one after that, which is called Pilegesh Begiva. We've referenced them various times from cross-reference, etc. So because we're going to the end, beginning of June, which leaves us 3 or 4 weeks essentially from here, what I think we're going to try to do is finish whatever we can by then, and then start again early, probably, I don't know what people's summer plans are, but my thought was to begin actually sometime in August, and finish Pilegesh Begiva over that period of time before the Chagim, so that post the Chagim we would start directly into Sefer Shmuel. Now, I don't know what people's schedules are, when they're here, when they're not here, so we'll kind of look at that when we get closer to the time, but that would be one way of addressing the issue. The alternative, of course, is to do whatever we can, and then when we start up after the Chagim, start up at the end of Shoftim and carry it forward that way. So my apologies. I had hoped to finish Shoftim at the end of this year. Just sort of these Mondays and Chagim and things kept getting in the way, but we'll do the best we can. So we're going to start and jump right in. Chapter 17, Perek Yud Zayin. Do any of you have that chart that I gave out at the very beginning of the year with the various Shoftim circle cycle? This one. Oh, somebody bought it. Oh, somebody took the line. Somebody bought it.
Chicken scribbling.
Excellent.
That's a good place for it.
At least you know where it is. All right, hold it here. We're going to come back to it. Okay, let's start. To really understand, to really begin to discuss the story carries over into two chapters, 17 and 18. To really understand what's going on and to put it into context, it's really important to get a overview of the whole story. So my intention for this morning is to actually learn through the whole story, even though we're going to ask more questions than we're going to answer. But we really need to get a picture of the whole, not only the storyline itself, but also the atmosphere in which the story is written, more perhaps than in other cases. Vahi ish mihar Ephraim ushmo michayhu. Once upon a time, there was a man from Har Ephraim by the name of Michayhu. It's an interesting way to start a story in Sefer unit in Sefer Shoftim. Before we go any further, what's immediately striking and odd about this in this first verse?
Well, it's not the transition about, you know, that there was peace or there was war or whatever there was between one Shofet and the next Shofet. The children of Bnei Yisrael didn't follow and went away. You don't have any of that transition type thing.
Right. Our normal introduction to any next Shofet story is Yisrael did evil in the eyes of God. God sold them into the hands of X. They were threatened. They were upset. God sent them a Shofet. The Shofet was. Various forms and various permutations. Start a story of Ahi Ish Mihar Ephraim. Once upon a time, there was a man from Har Ephraim. What is Vayihi? It was, when, where, how, who. We just jump right in to Har Ephraim. And a reminder that Har Ephraim is right in the center of the country. Har Ephraim is essentially the location of Shiloh, which is where the Mishkan stands, north of Beit El. Between Beit El and Shechem, it's a general geographic area, and there is a certain person by the name of Michayhu, also known as Micha. We'll see in a moment. Vayomer le'imo, Michayhu said to his mother, "Elef u'me'a hakesef asher lukach lach." Remember the 1,100 silver coins that were taken from you. Ve'at alit, and you cursed. You took an oath, cursing the person who took that money. Ve'gam amart be'oznai, and you mentioned this curse to me. at some point you said, you know what, that no good SOB took my money, cursed be him. So now I have a confession to make. Hine hakesef iti, ani lekachtiv. Dear mommy, I took the money. Here it is. Here's the bag. I don't want your curses. Here's the bag. Vatomer imo, baruch b'ni la'Hashem. My son, blessed be you to God. I guess she felt that after she had cursed him, she might as well balance the curse with a blessing. Vayashev et elef umeya hakesef le'imo. So he returned the 1,100 silver coins to his mother. How much is 1,100 silver coins in contemporary terms? We'll see in a moment. It'll be clear. No, so he returns the money to his mother, and his mother says, "Vatomer imo, wait a second. Hakdesh ikdashti et hakesef la'Hashem miyadi. I've already declared this money sanctified unto God. Livni, for my son's sake. La'asot pesel u'masecha, in order to make it into an idol. V'yata ashivenu lach, and now I will give it back to you." In other words, says the mother, right, so just so we get the storyline, right? Fill in the pieces. The son had stolen 1,100 coins of silver from his mother. The mother had taken an oath. Cursed be the one who took it. She had no idea who was responsible for stealing this money.
We had said.
I don't bite. If you push these two tables forward, I've got lots of room back here. Just push the two tables forward. Everybody just move a little bit, and there'll be room at the end of the table.
Long ago, I can't see.
And then you just push that table forward. Just push it forward. There you go. And then somebody can sit at the edge too.
You grew up with it being an A.
All right, let's go back to the story.
I was a B. I was in the front.
So let's just put from the pieces or from the hints that we have, let's reconstruct the story. Mrs. Michayu Sr., we have no name. Mrs. Michayu Sr., Michayu's mother, found that her savings of 1,100 coins of silver had been stolen. So she had taken an oath. She swore that curse be the person who stole my money. If I get this money back, hakdesh hikdashti et hakesef la'Hashem miyadi. I took an oath that I would sanctify, designate, make hekdesh this money. In other words, I'm not even looking for the money back. I'm willing to give this money to God for my son's sake by making it into a idol. For his benefit, because that's how you bimakdish something to God, by making it into an idol, especially when it's made out of silver. And that way, and it'll be for my son. So that was the oath that she had taken to herself. She mentioned this oath and this curse on the thief to her son. And suddenly his son owned up to being the thief. Right? V'gam amart baznai, hinei hakesef iti, ani lekachtiv, I took the money. Perikid Zayin, beginning of Perikid Zayin. Pesel Micha. So, everybody have the story? Yeah. So she takes this money, and that has now been returned to her, and she, true to her word, because she's a decent, honest person, true to her word, Vayashev et hakesef le'imo, the son returned the money to his mother, and she took 200 coins of silver and she gave it to the silversmith, from which to form, he made an out of it an idol or graven image, and Micha put this idol in his house. So by the time this story is over, what do we have? We have Michayhu, who is now the proud owner of a pestle, an idol. What this idol is made out of silver, pure silver.
Out of the money that he stole.
Out of the money that he had stolen from his mother, which she had designated to God by promising that if the money comes back, she'll make it into an idol for her son. Everybody got the pieces of the story here? Right? If you haven't figured out that this is somewhat satirical yet, it gets even better. Now, given that Michayu now has an idol in his house, when you are the proud owner of an idol, then intuitively, what do you do with an idol that's now in your house? Very expensive idol. This is a fortune.
Silver.
This idol made out of silver. What do you do with such a carved, graven, beautiful, precious silver pesa? You could display it, right? You gotta keep it locked up in your basement. This is precious. So Vaish Micha, notice the change of name. Went from Michayu to Micha very quickly. Vaish Micha lo Bet Elohim. This Micha had a temple. Now either he had a temple in which he put the pestle, or he had a temple which he built around the pestle. In other words, it's not clear which came first. Did he have a Beit Elohim, which God, now his mother has given him a pestle to put at the center of it, or he's got his pestle sitting on his mantle, so he says, okay, once I've got the idol, I've got the courts, like having the Aron Kodesh and building Lahavdil and building the shul around it. And he's got his pestle, he's going to build the Beit Elohim around it. However, a pestle by itself is not enough. Because if you want to build a temple, what do you need? What are the components that you need to build a temple and functioning temple? Mm-hmm. You've got your Aron Kodesh, right? Lahavdil,
like
you've got your pesel.
Like incense or something?
Right?
Place to sacrifice.
Well, what do you need to... What do you need?
You
need somebody to serve in this temple, right? You need some kind of a priest. And to have a priest, before we go and hire the person, we need to have
the
trappings, the supplies. So what is involved in having a priest? What do you need for a priest?
Priestly robes.
Priestly robes. Priestly robes contain garments, and they contain, if you borrow the imagery from the Mishkan for a moment, the uniform of the Kohen included all kinds of beautiful robes, and also included a very important functional component, which was the Choshe Mishpat, or the Urim V'Tumim, which was a way for the Kohen to communicate with God, right? Now, he's got a Pesel and a Beit Elohim, so clearly he doesn't have an Urim V'Tumim, but he can make the next best thing. Vayas Ephod Utrafim. Ephod is an apron, like the Kohen Gadol wore an Ephod, and Trafim, what are Trafim?
These are idols, no?
Trafim were a form of idols, or a form of idolatry. The last time we saw Trafim was by
Rachel,
who stole her
and
father's Trafim as they were running away from Lavan's house.
She hid them.
Hiding them is less the issue. The issue is, why did she steal them? So there's a great debate as to why she stole them. But what seems to be intuitive from the story is that when Lavan comes chasing after him, he sort of says, if I had my trafim, I would have used them to find... Right? In other words, these trafim were a kind of fortune-telling, soothsaying mechanism that they used in the pagan world to predict what was going on. So she stole them. Why did she steal them? So Rashi says to prevent her father from worshipping idols. But the alternative interpretation is that she stole them because, remember, Yaakov was trying to run away from Lavan's house secretly in the middle of the night. She was afraid that he would use the trafim to follow them. So she stole them so that he shouldn't be able to know where they were. That's sort of the mechanism by which trafim were used. So now he's got a Kohen garment, an ephod, and he's got his trafim. These are the easy parts to make. The more important part that he didn't have until now was the pestle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so he's got a pestle, he's got a bait, he's got a ephod, he's got his trafim. He's got all the pieces ready for opening business on his temple. with one missing component, which is
the Kohen.
He doesn't have a Kohen. Now, he can't be the Kohen because, well, he's the owner, so a little funny for him to be the Kohen and the owner of the business, and that would be a little funny. So what would you need for a Kohen would be, ideally, a Kohen.
Right.
But he doesn't have a Kohen. So he'll use the next best thing. Vayimale et yad echad mi banav vayihila lechohen. So he took one of his sons, and he says, okay,
he's made him a Kohen.
Yanko, I'll make you a Kohen. Well, if you can make a pesel and a fodin trafim, you can make a son a Kohen. That's the easiest part of the violation here.
It's the family,
right? He's got his idol, and he's got his trafim. He's as pagan as you come, and he's built himself his temple, and all he's missing is the Kohen. Not a problem. He's got a whole bunch of sons. He took one of his sons, and he says, okay, you be my Kohen. However, you understand, of course, that taking a pleb, otherwise known as an Israelite, and promoting them to the position of Kohen, you're dealing with a poor substitute at best. And he understands that. He's got a makeshift, he's got a pretend Kohen. All right. He's got a pretend pesel and a pretend bayit and a pretend ephod and trafim, so what's wrong with having a pretend Kohen? That's the story. So he's open for business. He's ready. He's got his bayit, he's got his pesel, he's got his ephod and trafim, he's got his Kohen, he's ready to open his doors. Welcome to the house of idolatry of Micha, also known as Peso Micha. Part 1. Bayimim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael ish hayashar b'einav yaseh. In those days, there is no king in Israel. Each man did what is right in his own eyes. Anarchy, no king.
It was like that when they had a kingdom.
We are a long way off from what we have when we have kings. But, and what this phrase means, but that's correct. Shoftim ends like that. We're going to see this verse 4 times today. But hold it. But you are jumping ahead of me, but you are correct.
No, just because...
Yes, 100%. Shoftim ends that way. That is correct. That is Pesel Micha's introduction. We are now, the scene is set. Somewhere in Har Ephraim, Micha is living there with his Pesel and his Bayit and his Ephod and Trafim and his makeshift fake Kohen. And of all of the pieces of the story, the piece that bothers him the most, that he's least comfortable with, just so we get a sense of priorities here, is the fact that his Kohen is not really a Kohen. That bothers him. So you'll see, of all the things that bothers him the most, we'll see he fixes that problem very quickly. Pasuk Zayin. Now, notice the paragraph break?
Mm-hmm.
So the paragraph break tells me several things. Number one, if I have a paragraph break in the middle of a story, it usually connotes either change of scene or change of speaker, change of focus, or sometimes a transition of time. So here is the Beit Elohim. It's functioning, it's running, it's sitting in Shiloh. Chazal identify the location of this place as 4 kilometers from the Mishkan in Shiloh. That's where Micha opens up his business. This is little Beit Elohim with his pesel and his non-Kohen Kohen. Vayhi na'ar mi bet lechem Yehuda mi mishpachat Yehuda. And once upon a time, there was the same context, a na'ar, young man, from Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem, there can be many Beit Lechems. Remember, we talked about this once before when we did Yiftzan and Yiftach, that there can be multiple cities in Israel called Beit Lechem. Beit Lechem Yehuda is usually identified as Beit Lechem Yehuda. Mi mishpachat Yehuda v'hu Levi. That already tells me something's weird here, because...
Why is Levi living
in... Levi could be living anywhere. Levium would live throughout the cities, throughout the land. But if he's Mishpachat Yehuda, v'hu Levi, there I have a contradiction built in, right? From the one hand, he's Mishpachat Yehuda, on the other hand, he's a Levi. So how can you do both? So Chazal will address this question. We had it by Shimshon. We had the same issue by Shimshon, where Chazal suggests that if he's mother was from one tribe and his father was another, so he's identified somewhere on both levels. It could be that his father was from Yehuda, and his father was from Levi, and his mother was from Yehuda, which would make sense considering the fact that he was living in Beit Lechem, Yehuda. So I have a marriage between a Levi and a Yehuda, and the result is this child who is a Levi from Mishpachat Yehuda, v'hu gar sham, and he was living there in Beit Lechem. However, this Levi, looking for adventure, v'yelech ha'ish mi'ha'ir mi'Beit Lechem Yehuda, lagur ba'asher yimtza. This Levi went on a journey, went for a hike, he went for exploring life. Beit Lechem Yehuda was a little bit too claustrophobic for him, perhaps. He decided to go explore life. So he leaves to go travel and live where? Live where?
Garsham.
No, where he lived originally was in Yehuda, Shirgu Garsham. But now, Vayelech Ha'ish Mi'ha'im Beit Lechem Yehuda, Lagur Ba'Sheim Tza. Left Beit Lechem to live Ba'Sheim Tza, wherever he finds a place. In other words, he doesn't have a destination. He's exploring life.
A wanderer.
Wanderer. Vayavo Har Ephraim. And comes to Har Ephraim. What is the single most significant institution in Har Ephraim? That's astounding. What's the single most important institution in Har Ephraim?
Mishkan.
Should be.
But it's not.
Right. But where does he end up?
Ad
Beit Micha.
But that's
he comes to Beit Micha. Lasot Darko. Traveling his way. So he's just traveling along, comes to Har Ephraim, and if he gets to Har Ephraim, he finds himself at the local house of Micha. Micha evidently turned this temple into a kind of bed and breakfast.
And he just happened to drop in.
Enterprising.
And he happened to drop in. I don't think it was so happened to. I think by this point in time, Beit Micha was a little bit more of an established place. It had maybe gone from a one-star hotel to a three-star hotel. But this bed and breakfast was becoming popular. And it includes, you know, it's a one-stop, all-service hotel. You get, there's a little chapel down in the basement or in the main floor as you walk in with this giant silver pestle made out of pure silver, which is really quite remarkable and astounding. And we'll see how much in a moment. And he builds his little bed and breakfast around it. It's a great way to drum up business. Levi comes knocking at the door. Dear Mr. Micha, do you have a place to stay? And Micha says to him, Vayomer lo Micha, me'ayin tavo? He says to him, yeah, sure, tell me, who are you? Strikes up a conversation with him. Hello, shalom aleichem, how are you? What can I do for you? You're traveling, it's very nice. Vayomer elav, the man says to him, Levi anochi. I'm a Levi. Mi bet lechem Yehuda. I'm a Levi, I'm a traveler, I'm an itinerant Levi. I was living in Beit Lechem, I've had enough of Beit Lechem, I'm moving on, looking for a place to live. Oh. Stars. Bells. Vayomer lo Micha. Micha says to him, I've got an offer you can't refuse. Shva imadi. You stay with me. You become my kohen. Wow. And you know what I'll pay you in response? I'll make you a contract on the spot. I will pay you 10 silver coins a year. Ve'erech begadim u'michyatecha, and room and board. I'll give you 10 silver coins a year and room and board. Average salary for a coin in the temple, 10 silver coins a year.
Every temple has to have a coin?
Every temple sort of has to have a coin. Otherwise, it's a kind of a funny-looking temple. What are you going to do in a temple if you don't have a coin? That wasn't done in those days. But think about the salary for a second here. Room and board plus 10 silver coins a year. How much money did Micha steal from his mother? 1,100 silver coins. Do the math. The equivalent of salary for 100 years. Do the math. From which she made a pesel with 200 coins.
A 20-year salary.
Right, from which she made the peso from? What did she do with the? What did she do when she got the money back?
200 went for the peso.
So she took 200 and gave it to the tzoref. 200 made it to the, gave it to the silversmith.
To make
into an idol. What happened to the other 900 shekel? Or 900 silver coins?
Right? Did she give it to
Mefa? So the Radak says, you don't have it in front of you, but it doesn't matter. The Radak says that she gave the Kohen, sorry, she gave the silversmith 200 coins as payment, and she made the pesel out of the remaining 900 coins.
Oh my God. Wow.
That's one possibility. The other possibility, which I think actually is more likely, is that she gave the silversmith 200 coins to make into an idol. Because if the average salary is 10 coins a year, it doesn't make sense to pay the silversmith 200 coins to make an idol.
Right.
It's a pretty hefty salary to spend a couple of days and forge, melt silver into an idol. So it's more likely she took the 200 coins, she gave them to the silversmith and said, here, make this into an idol. She had taken an oath that she would take the 1,100 coins of silver and make it, designated to God. Kedashti LaHashem. When she got the money back, she took 200 of it and she gave it to the silversmith to make into an idol. What did she do with the other 900?
Gave it to the temple.
Maybe. She gave it to her son or she kept it for herself. But either way, she didn't do what she had promised, which was to designate it to sanctify it. She didn't do any of that. I mean, she made him into an idol, but anyway.
He's also making a lady into a collar.
Well,
I mean, what do they care?
Wait a second. I don't care what the hell. She was worshiping idols. Put all the priorities here. So, in the meantime, so what did this Levi do? Did he bought the package. And he said, sure, not a problem. Sign, where do I sign? Great deal. I'm in. This now he treated this now like one of his sons. Of course he treated him like one of his sons. He just took one of his sons, who he had made a Kohen, fired him, and put this Na'ar in place of his son as a Kohen. So he treated him like one of his sons. And this Levi now served this Micha as his Kohen. Micha is ecstatic. Vayomer Micha, ata yadati ki yetiv Hashem li. Now I know God's on my side. Now I know God's been good to me. Ki yali halevi lechohen. Because look, I got a Levi for a Kohen. Levi's a legitimate thing, real McCoy. This temple's the real thing. It's got a real, honest to goodness, legitimate Levi serving as the Kohen. What could be more legitimating than that? God's on my side. End of chapter 17. Next verse. Vayhi b'yamim ahem ein melech b'Yisrael. In case I missed it the first time. Vayhi b'yamim ahem. Ein melech b'Yisrael. No king in Israel. Part 1. Scene shift. Part 2, although there's no paragraph break. U'bayamim ahem. Same time period. Shevet hadani mivakesh lo nachala l'shevet. Shevet hadani, Shevet Dan, is looking for a place to live, looking for land, looking for its territory. Why does it need to look for its territory? Because until that day, he had not yet settled in his tribal designated territory in the land of Israel. Dan is landless, troubled. We're going to spend some time talking about why Dan is so troubled and landless, but the short of it is that the tribal territory of Dan was designated to be on the coast. We've seen Shevet Dan. We've seen it by Shimsha. But part of the problem with Shevet Dan is that it's the only tribe given territorial whose entire designated territory is completely coastal, has no mountain land at all, or Hillel, and as we know from our study of Sefer Yehoshua in the beginning of Sefer Shoftim, coastal land was always more problematic to conquer because chariots, Canaanites, what have you. So Shevet Dan is sitting there on the coast and doesn't have a place to live. So what do they do? That's the background. Now the story. Vayishlechu v'nei Dan mimishpachtam chamisha anashim mikzotam. So Shevet Dan sent five spies, five messengers, five representatives, mikzotam, from their ktzei, is the edge. When you talk about ktzeh anashim, or the edge of the tribe, you're talking about the choicest, the strongest, the leaders, the individuals who are most suited for this, anashim b'nei chayil, warriors. Mitzora ume eshta'o. Shevet Dan, Tzora and eshta'o, correct? Mm-hmm. And what do they do? L'ragel et ha'aretz u'l'chokra, to spy out the land and to find, and to find l'chakor, to check out and find land that would be suitable for settlement. Now Shevet Dan is looking for land to settle. Obviously they're not looking for more coastal land because they have already, and it doesn't do them any good. So they're looking now for land in the mountains. Problem for them, most land in the mountains is already
taken.
So they've got to find land that is
available,
open. You understand the mission?
They need a good real estate agent.
They needed a good real estate agent. Yes, they did. V'yamru lahem l'chu chikru at ha'aretz. So they said to these people, go and spy out the land. V'yavo ha'efrayim ad bet micha ve'alinu sham. So they're journeying north, and they come to Har Ephraim. And if you're journeying north and you go to Har Ephraim, where do you go? Beit Micha. Where else are you going to go? Ma'alinu Sham, and there they slept. There they left. Right? They booked a room in the Hotel Micha, which is now the center of town in Har Ephraim. Hema in Beit Micha. They're in Beit Micha. This is what happens. This is remarkable. Vehema hikidu et kol hanar halevi. They recognize the voice of the Na'ar Halevi.
How's that?
That's a question we're going to have to address.
He's from Beit Lechem Yehuda.
He's from Beit Lechem Yehuda. They're from Shevet Dan, and they recognize his voice.
It's irrelevant.
considering the fact that we don't even know who this guy is.
Yeah.
They recognize. This is really quite.
We don't know his name.
He's nameless. Yeah.
He's nameless so far. He will. He will not remain nameless. So v'yasudu sham, they turned. They knocked on his door. V'yamnu lo mi'aviach alom amata sebazel malacha po. And they said, "Well, who brought you here? What are you doing here? What business do you have here? How did you come to be here? You mysterious Mr. X. What business do you have?" They're shocked. So he tells them, "Ayom alehem kova chazer sali micha kazeva kazer sali micha." He tells them the stories, and Micha did X, Y, and Z. He offered me such a position; I couldn't refuse. Vayiskineni vehila lachoeni, hired me. I became his guard. What could be better? Me, little Mister Nobody Levi, sitting down in Beit Lechem Yehuda, recognized by everybody from Shevet Dan. I ended up here in Beit Micha, and I became a kohen. Cat's meow. And now they realize, so they recognize the Kohen, or the Levi. They see him wearing ephodu trafim, which means that they see him wearing Kohen garments that have the ability to foresee, in their pagan mind, the ability to foresee the future. They're on a very important mission, which is
to find location for
their tribe so that they can settle. Vayamulo, so they turned to him and they said, Sha'alna b'Elohim. Ask God. Do us a favor. Just, you know, this trafim, turn it on. Let's run it. Let's do it. V'neida'at, tatzliach darkeinu asher anachnu achim aleh. So we know if we're going to be successful. Right? Now, if you're the Levi, you're in trouble now. Why are you in trouble now?
Because you're not really a Kohen.
But you know, first of all, you're not really a Kohen. And second of all, that the Trefim are not really Trefim. And thirdly, that this is a Beit Elohim, not a Beit Elohim. So you know that from all sides, this is really, you're in trouble. It's a really good window into how the world of idolatry operated. So you're being asked a direct question. No, ask God, are we going to succeed? That's the role of a Kohen. What are you going to answer? It's a real test. What are you going to answer?
You give a nebulous answer.
And you've got to figure out a way to couch this answer in such a way that you can't be wrong. Because if you're wrong, you're out of a job.
That's right.
So he can't
you're out of a job. You can't speak in the name of God and be wrong. It doesn't work.
He can't really give an answer.
So look what he does. He's a brilliant man. Brilliant guy. Vayomer lehem al hakohen, lechu l'shalom, go in peace, nochach Hashem darkechem asher telchu ba. May God be with you.
That was an easy ask.
Kind of reminds me of Star Wars.
Yes.
Right? May the Force be with you. Go in peace. May God be with you. So now these five spies, they can do no wrong because
God's going to go with them.
This recognizable Levi / doubling as a Kohen serving in the idolatrous temple of Micha promised them God is with them.
Is that supposed to be enough?
But if they're so wise to know this lad by his voice, they knew he wasn't a Kohen.
Oh yeah, that's correct. They knew he was promoted to a Kohen. And they knew they were in the house of Micha with
it's called the Peter Principle.
No, I don't know if it's a Peter Principle. It's called pagan idolatry.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would give it the credibility of being called the Peter Principle. I believe in the Peter Principle. This is pure pagan idolatry.
But did the men believe him?
Apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they did believe him.
Oh, yeah.
But they knew he wasn't.
They're now mandated with this. I mean, what were they doing in Beit Micha if they didn't believe in the power of Beit Micha?
They
asked him to, right? Remember, we're 4 kilometers from the Mishkan. If they wanted to go ask God, they could have easily gone to the Mishkan. They didn't go to the Mishkan. There's a reason they didn't go to the Mishkan.
The
reason they don't go to the Mishkan will not become clear to us until we learn Sefer Shmuel. But the opening of Sefer Shmuel and the story of Pesach Micha are actually very interconnected. So we're going to come back to that. Pasuk Zayin. Now, the rest of this perek is the story of Shevet Dan. So we are going to go through, I want to go through it a little quicker, because the core pieces of the story we have, but I want to go through the rest of this so we get the whole chapter by the end of the end of the class. Everything okay back there?
We're fine.
You're fine? Okay.
We need pens.
Oh, we need pens. Okay. I've got an extra one over here. Pasuk Zayin. Vayelchu chameshet ha'anashim vayavou Elisha. These five people, they all go on the journey and they come to Laish. Now, Laish is a city that has two names. It's called Laish in Sefer Shoftim. It's referred to in Sefer Shmuel as Leshem. In Sefer Yeshua as Leshem. And it's all the way up here.
Wow. Oh! Can't even reach.
In the Golan Heights.
They just went up there.
All the way up there from Har Ephraim. Because there's a reason they go up. There's two reasons they go up there. One I'll tell you, one I won't. The first reason they go up there is because they're here and they're looking for
land.
That's not
available.
Tribe.
And hilly. And hilltop land. They've had enough of coastland, right? So go north. Go north, my son, right? Instead of west. No, go north.
But it's
so they
inhabited.
Go, this is all taken.
Right.
This is all taken. They get to here. This is not taken. This is
Amic Israel.
Open. Amic Israel. But, problem here.
You can get the chariots on.
Yeah, it's the same problem as the coast. What value does it have? What does it give them value added over where they are? So they go further north into the Galil.
But there are other
banks.
Zebulun and Naphtali is taken. So they go further north. Into the mountains of the Bashan, or the Golan Heights, as it is known today. In those days, it was called the Bashan. Well, it was empty of Israelites.
But had been conquered.
It had not been conquered. It's empty of Israelites. It is settled. There are local population, indigenous populations there, but they are indigenous. They're Canaanites, which is
Fair game.
Part of the story of the conquest of Canaan. Okay, so what do? They come to Laish. Vayiru et ha'am asher bekirba yoshevet levetach. They found the local inhabitants there, dwelling securely. What does that mean, dwelling securely?
Nobody bothered them.
They didn't feel they have any enemies, and therefore they were dwelling without necessarily the fear of attack, strong defenses, walls and chariots and watchmen and guards. This is a city that is just minding its business, living its life without any need for defensive measures. Kimishpat Tzidonim, according to the laws of the Tzidonim, which means that they are part of the Canaanites living in the north, Tzidon is Sidon, north of part of Lebanon. Shoket, quiet, voteach, secure. Ein machlim, davar ba'aretz yoresh etzer. There's no conflict, there's no struggles leadership. Urechokim hema mitzidonim, and they're very far from Sidon. In other words, they're part of, look at the map, they're part of an alliance or part of the kingdom of Sidon. Sidon is essentially the northern kingdom here, it's known today as Lebanon. Tyre and Sidon are the two port cities, and Sidon is essentially the name of the people who live there. They're over here in this area here called Laish. They're part of this region, but they're separate from it. So they live kimishpat tzidonim, but where are we up to? V'davar en lehem imadam, but they have no communication with anybody else. They're very isolated. They have no alliances. They have no military pacts or alliances with any other people. Why is that relevant information?
Because they're easy to conquer.
Right.
Easy to conquer. Nobody's come to their aid. They have no political and military alliances. They have no communication. There's no issues here. There's no defenses. They are an easy target. Having succeeded in their mission, they go home, all the way down to Tzora and Eshta'ol. Conversation begins. The brothers turn to them and they say to him, "My five messengers, what did you find?" They said, "Kumu v'na'ale aleihem, come and let us go up and conquer them." Gira'inu et ha'aretz v'nei tova ma'od. The land is very good. By the way, does it sound familiar? Kumu v'na'ale el ha'aretz v'nei et ha'aretz v'nei tova ma'od. What does it sound like? The report that the spies of Moshe should have given. The report that essentially Kalev and Yeshua gave in tenor and focus. You're being silent, you're being quiet, you're procrastinating. Don't be lazy. It's time to go and conquer the land. Fine. And they said, Kivo Achem, when you come into the land of Israel, unlike the days of Yeshua and the spies of Moshe, Tavo al am boteach v'aretz rechavat yadayim. You'll come to all people that are secure, meaning they don't care, they're not defending themselves, they don't think they're going to be attacked, they're an easy target, you can pick them off. And the land is there's an expansive land. Kinatna lokim biyadchem. God has given you this land into your hands. Makom asher ein shem machsor, kol devar asher ba'aretz, nothing lacking. It's a beautiful, fertile land. Okay? They're ready to go. Vayitzu misham mishpachat adanim mitzora u'me'eshta'ol 600 ish chagur klei milchama. They send an army, 600 soldiers armed, chamushim, armed with swords, from the cities of Tzora and Eshta'ol. Vayalu, they're going north. So they're going from Tzora and Eshta'ol, down here. Where are we? Tzora and Eshta'ol. And they're going to go all the way up to the Golan. To do that, they head first into the hills. And they go north. North of Yerushalayim is an area called Kiryat Ye'arim. And that's where they go first. Ve'yalu ve'yachanu be'Kiryat Ye'arim be'Yehuda. Where is Kiryat Ye'arim today? Anybody know? Kiryat Yearim today is Telstone. You see all the signs in Telstone all say Kiryat Yearim. Correct. Kiryat Yearim is Telstone. They gave it a nickname, they called it Machane Dan, meaning the temporary camp of Dan on their journey north. Just a little further from Kiryat Yearim. So from there they go north. So when you go north, you get into Har Ephraim. You get to Har Ephraim, you have to go to
Beit
Micha. It's like coming to St. Louis and not seeing the arch. You can't go to Har Ephraim and not see Beit Micha. No, the young Israel is Shiloh, right? This is Pesel Micha. This is, you'll pardon the analogy, Bush Stadium. This is the local idolatry. This is. The five spies walking with them say to them. They come to Beit Micha as a hotel. And by now it's a huge hotel. 600 soldiers. How many rooms do you have in a hotel of 600 soldiers can show up one night and book?
Like a resort.
And
they're about to
guess.
It's huge. So they don't even know that there's a temple there. This thing started as a house for a temple. Now it's then went to a bed and breakfast. Now it's become the major resort of the region. So these five spies say to the rest of their brethren, guess what? You know, we've got lucky today. Because we're sitting in a hotel or a resort that includes not only a golf course and a tennis court and the swimming pool and all the other stuff, but it's got a fod utrafim pesel umasecha. You know what to do. Here it is. Here's the plan. So they come and they go knocking on the door of the Na'ar. Shalom. Hey, Na'ar, so-and-so. Shalom Aleichem, how you doing? How are you? Fine, thank you. 600 ish chagurim klei milchamtam nitzavim petach hashar Hashem ibnei Dan. These five spies go knocking on the door of this Na'ar. In the meantime, behind them are standing 600 drawn swords. These five spies, they go and they walked into the temple and they took the Eifod and the Trefim and the Pesel and the Masicha and they took it. And the Kohen is standing there, the Kohen slash Levi, standing there opposite the Shav, with 600 soldiers standing there with their swords drawn, saying to him, not a word. The soldiers came to the Beit Micha, they come to to steal the entire temple, and the Kohen found them and he catches them and he says, what are you doing? So they answered the Kohen, and remember they know this guy. Mm-hmm. They recognize him. Vayomulo, they said to him, Hacharesh. Shh. Be quiet. What's the symbol for being quiet? When you want to tell somebody to be quiet, you can do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know where that comes from?
With
Moshe,
maybe?
Too philosophical.
This word.
Comes from this phrase. Look at the phrase. Hacharesh. Sim yadcha al picha.
Put your hand on
him.
That's where it comes from.
That's where it comes
wow.
from. Hacharesh. Sim yadcha al picha. And we'll make you an offer you can't refuse. Velech imanu. You come with us. Hey, Mr. Na'ar, you be our Kohen. And we'll give you a promotion. Why will we give you a promotion? Because remember, they've stolen the Pesel, the Trafim, and the Ephod. So what are they going to do clearly? They're going to set up their own
temple.
Ha tov heyotcha Kohen lebet ish echad, o heyotcha Kohen leshevet ulemishpacha b'Yisrael. We're going up to establish a whole new settlement. A whole new tribe. in the north. She's here, sitting here in Beit Micha. What are you? You're a Kohen. Good, so you got a promotion. Big deal. But it's a promotion to be a Kohen in a local temple of one Shlemazel called Micha. We are going to build an entire city, an entire community. You can be the Kohen Gadol of Shevita. Oh, this Na'ar, he loves this.
But we don't even know his name.
Not yet. We will. We'll know a lot about this guy. Vayitav lev ha-kohen. Oh, well, he liked that idea. So he took all the pieces, including the peso, and he jumped on the wagon, and he's going with these guys. They go on their journey, and they put the women and children and the cattle in front of them. Why? So 600 soldiers are all going up north, right? They're led by 600 soldiers, but obviously there's a population behind with them, because they're moving, they're not. So why do they put the women and children in front and the cattle in front of them?
In case they're attacked.
Because who's going to attack them now? Who are they now afraid of on their journey?
Micha.
Micha and his reprisal. Because they just stole from Micha
all his valuable goods.
This temple, this Pesel and the Masicha and the Ephod of Tafi, they took the whole temple with them. Micha's entire operation is now in jeopardy.
The resort is going to be in trouble.
So they start their journey north. So the people at Micha's house, they woke up, they went to services the next morning, went to whatever the local called it, and they walk into the temple, empty. Kohen is gone, the ephod is gone, the trefim is gone, the pesel and the masicha. They come running to Micha and they said, what did you sell us a bill of goods? You told us there was a temple here. And he said, what are you talking about? And they start to run. They catch up to Bnei Dan. Vayikra'u et el Bnei Dan. They know though. Who slept here last night? Shevet Dan. So they go running after them up north. Vayasebu pnehem, vayamru l'micha. And they surrounded them. They surrounded them. So the Bnei Dan said to Micha, Malacha kinizakta, what are you doing here? What are you running after us for? What have we done to you? Now, the next verse is probably the most cynical, satirical, and profound verse in Tanakh. Vayomer. Et Elohai asher asiti lekachtem. My God, whom I had made, you stole. Think about the implication of that verse. It's a remarkable sentiment of what the world of pagan idolatry was about. Et Elohai asher asiti lekachtem. Not only that, Veta Kohen! And you took my Kohen! Vatachu, umali, od. What do I have left? Mazer tomlu elai malach. And then you come and you say to me, what business do I have here? You took it all from me. Vayomer elav Bnei Dan. So Bnei Dan said to Micha and his soldiers, Al tashma kocha imanu. Don't raise your voice with us. Don't you raise your voice with us. Pen yifku'u b'chem anashim merei nefesh. Lest these people with their swords drawn, Micha, you know what? They're all merei nefesh. They're all very bitter, very angry. They're looking for blood. They're just looking to start a fight. You don't want to start up with these people. Trust me. Pen yifku'u b'chem anashim merei nefesh. You will pay a heavy price if you start up with these people. So Micha thinks about it for a minute. And they let Bnei Dan go on their way. Micha sees that these people are stronger than he. Vayifen vayashav el beito, goes back to his house. So what happened? The end of the story? Bnei Dan headed north together with their pesel, masecha, ephod, tefillin, and their prize, which is their Levi/Kohen. which is really their prize in this whole story. And Micha goes back to his now empty bed and breakfast hotel resort. Hehema lakhu et asher asa Micha. They took that which Micha had made. Ve'et ha-kohen asher hayalo. This kohen can't escape his attention. Ve'yavo al Laish. And they came and attacked the city of Laish. Al am shoket, a quiet people. Uvoteach. Ve'yaku otam l'fichar, and they killed them by the sword. Ve'ta'ir sarfu be'esh, they razed the city. Ve'ein matzil, there was nobody to come to these people's aid. There was nobody to save them. It's too far from Sidon for V'davar en lahem imadam. They had no alliances. V'ibayim b'chashel lebet rechov. V'yevnu et ha'ir v'yeshubah. The people of Dan settled there and they built their new city. What do they call it? V'yikru'u shem ha'ir Dan. They named the city Dan. They probably called it New Dan. Anybody been up to Tel Dan in recent years? Beautiful area. V'shem Dan Avihem, Asher Yulad LiYisrael. V'ulam Laish, Shem Ha'il Rishana. The original name of the city was Laish. V'yakimu Lehem B'nei Dan et HaPasel. What did they do with the Pesel? They put it there in Shevet Dan, and they made into a temple. And who did they designate as the Kohen Gadol? The Levi. But now we need to know the identity of this guy. V'yohonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe hu uvanav ayu kohanim l'shevet adani ad yom glot aretz. This Levi was by the name of Gershom Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. He was the Levi slash Kohen, and his children served Shevet Dan until the days of Shevet Dan went into exile. V'yasimu lehem et pesel micha asher asa, and this pesel micha now lived in Shevet Dan, kol yemei heyot bet ha'elokim b'shiloh. Contemporary to all the days that Beit Elohim stood in Shiloh, which is the only one of the first references to the Mishkan in Shiloh that we have in Sefer Shoftim. That's the story of Pesel Micha. And striking us immediately, besides the satire of the story, is what's missing. And what's so odd and dramatically different of this story than any of the previous stories we have seen in Sefer Shoftim. We talked about at the very beginning the first verse of the opening that was so different.
And that was peace in the land.
Peace in the land. The Israel did evil. The God gave him to the hands of. What is the whole structure of Sefer Shoftim has revolved around the concept of a shofet and the battle and the tshuva and the nothing. None of that's here. This is a little story. It starts once upon a time and it ends once upon a time. Well, quite a story, right? Quite a story. Battles and Shevet Dan and Pesel Micha and idolatry and pagan. And of course, the hero of this whole story is Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. This Na'ar HaLevi was promoted to a Kohen who seems to be more important to them all than this Pesel. Far more significant than the Pesel and the Masicha and the Ephod Trafim, when this Micha got hold of this Levi and made him into a Kohen, he was sitting pretty. It became the most popular place in town. When Shevet Dan, when traveling north, they went to this guy, they said to him, we're going to take all the temple, but that's nothing compared to the fact that we want you to come with us. We will make you into a Kohen Gadol. He goes with them. Micha goes running after them because they stole his Pesel and they stole his Kohen. And then they go up north, and what do? They build the Pesel, and they build the Beit Elohim. But then they made Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe their chief Kohen till the end of days. The subtext of the story is that the real central personality in this whole piece is this Levi. It's Micha and this Levi, but Micha is now secondary to the primary issue, which is the Levi. So, of course, it begs the question, who is he? And how did they recognize him? So I could spill the beans, and I could tell you the key to the story, to the mystery.
Tell back next
Stay tuned.
Week.
Right? But I will. I'll leave you with the bombshell at the end of this year. No, no, I will. I won't leave you hanging. I'll leave you with the bombshell at the end of this year. 10:29. I will tell you, Brunetta. I will tell you the bombshell is who this Levi really is, and why they recognize him. But before that, I want to do one more thing, which is to recognize how dramatic this part of Sefer Shoftim is, but also how structured it is. We saw one story. That story, called Pesach Micha, contained within it two very powerful phrases that seem to have nothing to do with the story. They only sort of set up like a kind of bracket to the introduction to the story. And they were introductions to both parts of the story, both the story of Micha and his mother, and the story of Shevet Dan's journey north. That phrase being?
No king in Israel.
No king in Israel. We saw it twice, in its full form at the beginning of Perek Yitzayin, in a short form, in the middle of beginning of Perek Yitzchet, by Mimahem Ein Melech B'Yisrael, no king of Israel. It doesn't have that last piece about everybody did what was right in the Vodas. Chapter 19, which we're not going to read through, but I want to show you its structure, begins the second story, which is Pilagesh B'Giva. Pilagesh B'Giva, at one point we read parts of it, we're going to look at it, Mizrat Hashem, in more detail, probably at the end of the summer or beginning of the year. But if you look at its structure, how does it begin? Vayehi bayamim ha'hem ein melech b'Yisrael. Again, it doesn't have that
last part,
but that's how it starts. And it continues with a really horrific story. Pilagesh B'Giva is probably the most graphic story. It's a civil war. It is, again, not structured by a shofet. There's no shofet in the story. There's no none of the pieces that we're familiar with in the rest of the book. It's a standalone story. It ends with a terrible civil war that almost wipes out Shevet Binyamin. It actually starts with, in a very similar fashion to the way Pesel Micha starts. It talks about Ish Levi. Vayimimahem ein melech b'Yisrael, vayhi Ish Levi gar b'yarkatei Har Ephraim. A certain Levi who lived in Har Ephraim had a pilegesh, and the rest of the story unfolds. Go to the end of Perek Chaf Aleph. How does the story end? Last verse of Sefer Shoftim. Vayimimahem ein melech b'Yisrael, ish hayashar be'enav yas. Which is the same verse with which we began. Which means, actually, I'm going to give this to you now. It's a there's a number of charts which we're going to use over the course of our study of this part of Sefer Shoftim, but this is, if you look at the middle of this page, what you'll see is these four verses that I just quoted. Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Vav by Mimahem and Melech Yisrael Ish Yashar Be'enav Yaaseh. The last verse of Sefer Shoftim, which Shazan correctly pointed out, is the exact same verse as it appears at the end of the book by Mimahem and Melech Yisrael Ish Yashar Be'enav Yaaseh. In the middle, I have the same phrase twice. Once in the introduction to part two of Sefer of Pesach Micha, the story of Shevet Dan, in a shorter form by Mimahem and Melech Yisrael. And the second time in the beginning of Perek Yutet, the beginning of Pesel Micha, Pilagish Begiva, Beimimahem, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, etc. In other words, it almost reads like called it a chiastic structure, if you know what that means, but it almost reads like these two stories. Pesel Micha and Pilagesh B'Giva are completely separate from the rest of the book. They don't follow the structure of the rest of the book. There's no shofet in either of these stories. There's no external danger. There's no Israel does evil in the eyes of God. None of this. Remember when we talked back in chapter 2 about how the whole book is structured around this cycle? That cycle ends with Shimshon. We won't see it again. Maybe in Sefer Shmuel you'll see it once. But that first half of the book, which is in the top chart, the whole first half, Vayakam Hashem Shoftim VeYoshiyum, all the list of the Shoftim that we learned. It's part one. Part two of the book are two stories, Pesel Mechem Pelegesh Begiver, that stand by themselves. What holds them together, what links them together, is a phrase. That phrase, in its full form, Ayamim Mehem, Ein Melech Yisrael, Ish Hayashar Be'enav Yaseh, that's its full form. And we will, not today, but we will analyze what this half of the phrase means and what this half of the phrase means. Why is it significant that there's no king in Israel? Why is it significant that there's kind of a sense of anarchy because of that? That's how it starts. That's how it ends. Ish hayashar be'enav ya'aseh. That's how it ends. And in the middle, I have the short form. Pesamicha b'yamim mehem ein melech Yisrael b'yamim hahem ein melech Yisrael. In other words, the short form is kind of way of saying dot dot dot. Ein melech Yisrael dot dot dot. Ein melech Yisrael dot dot dot. Conclusion, same phrase, four times. Bracketing these two stories. Giving me a structure that says these stories stand alone from the rest of the book. They stand alone structurally.
They're also out of order, I think.
Well, that's the big question. What order are they in? What's the chronological context of each of these stories? Once I know that the stories stand by themselves in the Book of Shoftim, they don't necessarily follow in sequence, then it begs the question of when these stories take place. We're going to open with this discussion next week, B'zat Hashem. When do these stories take place? One argument is that they are chronologically equivalent. They just go from Shimshon. After Shimshon, there's no replacement to a Shofet. Says the Radak, Shofet, Melech, it all means the same thing. If there's no Melech, it means there's no Shofet. We've reached a post-Shofet era. But there's another opinion, that of Rashi, that of the Gemara, that of Chazal, that of the vast majority of Mefarshim, which is that the reference here is a melech instead of a shofet. There are shoftim, there's no melech. And all of the ills of Sefer Shoftim are because we have a shofet and not a melech. And there's a great debate that takes place over the chronology of these two stories. One of the proofs to the early placement theory of these two stories is the identity of the Levi, who is Yonatan ben Gershom
ben Menashe.
However, Yonatan ben Gershom Ben
Menashe.
Take a look at the way it's written. Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe. Take a look at the name Menashe in the text. It's spelled funny. Why is it spelled funny? Because it's got a nun that is written as a superscript. Correct? Ben Menashe. Said Chazal, but the reason it's written that way is because the nun was added to protect the identity of the true identity of this individual. If I remove the nun, then I have Gershom ben Moshe. Moshe's two children are? Name of Moshe Rabbeinu's two children. Gershom and Eliezer.
And he must be a son.
Yonatan ben Gershom ben Menashe is Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson.
What a coup. Look what they got.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which explains why they recognize his voice. This is not just a Levi becoming a Kohen. This is Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson becoming their Kohen in the house of Micha and the idolatrous temples of Beshevet Dan.
a fake still, but not real still.
So how do they recognize his voice from Moshe's?
Moshe, he grew up in the... If the story is early, it's a period of Yeshua or Pinchas, then we're dealing with Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson. Moshe Rabbeinu's grandson grew up with them. They all knew who he was. It was before the camp broke up.
So did they put it at the
but
end?
But you understand what it means to build an idolatrous temple and hire as your Kohen Gadol the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. We are dealing with a very different world. To be continued.